Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome. Make yourself comfortable. This is episode 153 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley. David Cameron Walker is here as well. Hello, DC.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Happy birthday.
You would never miss the opportunity to play a little bit of Stevie on We Are Going Up, would you?
Of course. Have you had a nice day?
It is today. I've spent 5 hours on a megabus. 5 hours on a megabus. And I tweeted about this, and Megabus UK tweeted back wishing me a happy birthday, which I did enjoy.
Well, that's some consolation then, wasn't it, I suppose?
I also noticed you had a little bit of Phil Brown singing "This is the best trip I've ever been on" lined up there. I thought you were going to hit me with that straight away.
I was trying to do it so you couldn't hear.
Oh, no, I could hear. But yeah, it is today. It is today. Best present I've got so far, well, wasn't last night's result, but it was a little charger, like a portable charger for my phone. Meaning it'll never run out of juice when I'm on these 5 hour megabuses back home. So that did the job today. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good. No,
I'm okay.
It's a very interesting... You can get rid of Stevie now. Get rid of Stevie. Sorry, Stevie. He's gone. You weren't in Amsterdam at the weekend like I was.
No.
So did you manage to... how much football did you see? I've got to be honest, I didn't really see the Reading-Arsenal game. I've only seen the highlights back. My heart did sink for poor Adam Federici, though, with that mistake in extra time.
Oh, God.
Heartbreaking.
I was gutted for him because he had a good game, actually. He made some really good saves, although the two crucial moments, even the first goal, he didn't do that well on. And then that second goal, Sanchez's second goal, absolutely horrendous error. But have you seen what's been doing the rounds today about Federici?
No.
You know he's getting married in the summer, don't you? Well, I say in the summer.
Why would I know that?
He's getting married in about a month or so's time.
Many congratulations to the Federici.
Yeah, he's getting married on the day of the FA Cup final, though, isn't he?
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Ah.
Seems a bit convenient, if you ask me.
What are you trying to suggest?
I'm just saying.
Okay.
These weddings are not easy to reschedule once they're booked.
Conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theory. Right, so we will... commiserations to Reading. We will talk shortly about the reason I went home and spent 5 hours on a megabus coming back. So we're going to hear from Phil Brown, the Southend United manager, who masterminded a 1-0 victory for Southend at the JD Stadium on Tuesday night, sadly, this week.
He is delighted.
Of course he
is. A happy man.
Of course he bloody is.
This is the best trip I've ever been on.
There's more where that came from.
Go away,
get used to it. I've got the controls.
Oh, you have as well. This doesn't usually happen. So we'll hear from Phil Brown after that result later. We'll also give our reaction to the news that Mickey Adams has left Tranmere. We'll discuss the Football League Players of the Year. And we will preview the penultimate weekend of the season. Now Watford are in charge of their own destiny like we were. Will they balls it up like we did? But first, we're going to start this week in League 2. Now, 13 years ago, DC, Burton Albion were playing... Can you guess what division they were playing in 13 years ago?
God knows. Probably lower than the Conference. What, Conference North? Or
the Northern Premier League.
Northern Premier.
Next season, though, they're going to be playing the third tier of English football for the first time in their history. After coming close in the playoffs in the last 2 years, including that 1-0 defeat to Fleetwood at Wembley last season, the Brewers have made it third time lucky. They clinch promotion with 2 games of the season still to spare by making it 10 games unbeaten with a 2-1 win against Morecambe at the Globe Arena on Saturday, a result that meant promotion to League One, of course, under the expert leadership now of Mr. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. So let's speak to a man who was there out on the pitch on Saturday in the beautiful sunshine at Morecambe, interviewing the jubilant players as they celebrated and drank champagne on the pitch. He is friend of the show, Joe Shannon, and Joe is a reporter and commentator on Burton Albion for BBC Radio Derby. And we're delighted to say that Joe is on the line right now. Joe, thank you very much for joining us. Burton Albion are a League One club. What was that like to cover on Saturday?
Oh, it was was remarkable, Mark, really, for all sorts of reasons. Not least the fact it was such an historic day for Burton, you know, arguably the greatest day in the club's history. They've never been as high as League One, of course. They've only been a Football League club for 5 or 6 years. And I turned to my co-commentator on the final whistle when we knew that the Wickham result had gone Burton's way. They drew 0-0 with Wimbledon, of course. And there were tears in his eyes. And there were tears in the eyes of a lot of the Burton fans, I think, in the celebrations post-match. And it shows just how much it meant to the club and I think to the community. I was interviewing Ben Robinson, the Burton chairman, who's been with the club throughout this entire process. I mean, you've got to remember, Burton, 13 years ago, were a Northern Premier League club. And now they'll be facing the likes of Coventry City in League One next season, to name but one ex-Premier League club that they'll be up against. And I spoke to the chairman, as I say, after the game, and his emphasis was on the results and the promotion being a massive thing, not just for Burton as a football club, but Burton as a town, Burton as a community. So the overriding emotion I took from it was that it was truly an historic day for everybody concerned.
And Joe, this is, in many ways, this promotion has some sort of similarities to the way that Burton were first promoted to the Football League, in so much that Nigel Clough did so much to take them to the brink, but then obviously left before they finally got up. And Gary Rowett did much the same this time, leaving earlier in the season before Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank has come in and taken the team on and finished the job, getting them into the third tier. I mean, what exactly has Hasselbank done since coming in to complete this final step? Has he done much at all, or is it much a continuation of what was already going on?
Interesting one. I think great credit, first of all, has to be given to Gary Rowett for the work that he did. When he took over at Burton, they were fighting against relegation, of course, and he took them to playoff contenders, promotion contenders. And if you look at the squads from the game against Morecambe at the weekend, I think off the top of my head, 11 of the players involved were players that were brought to Burton by Gary Rowett. So if you look at the bulk of the squad, I think a lot of the Rowett squad has been retained by Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. But I think it's important to note he's made subtle changes, got rid of a couple of fans' favourites, a couple of really experienced players who've been there for years, Ian Sharps, Lee Bell, Jimmy Phillips, who was the longest-serving player at Burton at the start of the season. So these were difficult decisions to make, but the new manager's come in and he's tweaked the squad ever so slightly. He's brought in a number of loan players who have all made a difference as the campaign's gone on. And I think it's made Burton a better team, actually. I think what he's also done is there's been a slight change in the style of play. Perhaps under Gary Rowett, they were that little bit more direct. Under Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, I think the football perhaps is a little bit more emphasis on the ground. I think the style of football is perhaps a little bit more attractive than it was before. So he's made little differences that I think have actually made Burton overall a better team. I mean, they were very good when Gary Rowett left to go to Birmingham City. That's why he got the job in the first place, of course, at St Andrews. But I think Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank has made Burton an even better team defensively. They are so solid at the back. The back five, if you include the goalkeeper, has picked itself all season. And he's also made them, I think, a little bit more creative going forward. I should also say, you've got to take into account the staff he's had with him. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, not necessarily someone who would have known the rigours and the ins and outs of League Two football having arrived at the club. But David Oldfield, who's been his assistant manager, I think has made a key contribution. There's Gavin Ward as well, who has helped John McLaughlin become one of the best keepers in the division. So it's subtle changes, little changes to personnel, to the coaching staff, to the style of play that I think Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank has implemented. And that's a massive reason why Burton are where they are. But as I say, and Jimmy's mentioned this himself, great credit to Gary Rowett for, I think, laying the foundations, and of course Nigel Clough in the years before that.
One of the interesting things about Burton is that if you look at the team, there's not actually any player who scored more than 10 goals this season. So if you think that Burton probably will go on to win the title now, you'd expect. It just shows when you look at it. I think it's 11 players I've counted who've scored more than one goal this season. So one of the great strengths of this side has been that there's been goals from throughout the whole 11.
Yeah, it's incredible, Mark. Everybody's contributed. I think the stat is something like, if you include own goals, 21 different goal scorers for Burton this season. And as you say, nobody's hit double figures in the league, which is extraordinary, but it just goes to show that you don't need a 20-goal-a-season striker, certainly not in League Two, if you're to be successful. I think there are certain clubs that probably relied too heavily on goal scorers. You know, if you look at somebody like Northampton, possibly, Mark Richards, their key goal-scoring striker, have they relied on him too much this season? Quite possibly. But they've assembled a squad where I think they've got goal-scoring ability if you go throughout the team. Phil Edwards, the right-back, has scored four this season. You've got John Messino, Cancel Sheriff, the defenders. Damien McCrory, the left-back, he's been the penalty taker for a while this season. He's chipped in with some important goals. And you go through the midfielders, some of the loan signings that Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank has brought in, players like Adam McGurk, whose goal tally has gone up slowly but surely as the season's gone on. And it's been a very reliable set of players, you know, and it's one of those squads where if you bring somebody in for a game or if you rotate two or three players, it doesn't weaken the squad, it doesn't weaken the team, and you know that you're going to get goals from this Burton Albion inside. And there's no reliance on one given player. I think that's the biggest thing, actually, about Burton's success this season. We've mentioned it before in commentaries. There's no I in that Burton team. It's just a squad. There's no stars. There's nobody flash. There's no one who necessarily stands out in terms of individuals. It's just a very reliable, very good, very strong squad.
That was going to be my next question, actually. You've kind of answered it already. I was going to say, you know, it's a very much a team effort in terms of the goal scoring, sharing the goal scoring around the team. But, you know, are there any players that you would look to, Burton, and say they are, you know, the key performers that you would look to, the senior players, the leaders on the pitch, or is it truly everybody contributing equally?
No, I mean, tell you what, I think if I had to pick two or three players, there are perhaps, and I don't want to contradict what I've just said, but there are two or three that perhaps do stand out. And I think first and foremost, John Messino, the captain, mostly been a central midfielder for most of his career, came to the club as a central midfielder, did well, then largely due to injuries, he was forced into the central defensive position just before Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank took charge. And he's been so successful that he stayed as a central defender ever since. And I think now, if you ask John, he'd say central defence is his number one position. He's carved out a whole new career for himself, I think. He's taken over as captain after Ian Sharks left the club. And he has been inspirational at the back for Burton. If I was to mention a couple of other players, I think Stuart Bevan up front, in my view, one of the best players technically in the division. I think he might have liked to have contributed a few more goals, but his, you know, his close control, the way he hassles defenders, I think he's one of the best players in League Two.
Is there,
at the other end,
is there a little bit of Wickham bias in that, though?
There might be, yeah. I was just saying the two ex-Wickham players, haven't I? Yeah, they've learnt their trade at Wickham. They've come from a very good club, they really have. And John McLaughlin in goal as well, you know, a couple of crucial penalty saves. He's got better as the season's gone on. I think Gavin Ward coming in as the goalkeeping coach, he's worked really well with him. And he's one of the best keepers in League Two. So, yeah, if I had to pick three individuals, it'd probably be those three.
We'll come on to Wickham themselves in just a second, but let's talk a bit about Burton next season then. If you look down some of the clubs in League One, there's some big football clubs there. Do you get the feeling, though, that, you know, this is the right time for Burton Albion? It's felt like, you know, they've taken a few years to make this step, but this is the moment that they're going to go up there and do themselves justice in a high division.
Yeah, I think so. I don't see any reason why not. You know, I think a number of the players have played football at League One level and have done so successfully. A number of the signings, you know, players that were brought in last summer came from League One clubs. Messino, Bevan, both former Preston players. McLaughlin, of course, used to play for Bradford City. Lucas Aikins has played at League One level. I think, you know, the squad is pretty capable. They'll need one or two additions. I think they've relied on loan players this season, you know, as clubs often do at League Two and League One level. There is a reliance on the loan market, so perhaps one or two new signings would be useful for Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. But I think they're more than capable. You know, if you look at clubs in recent years, Crawley Town, perhaps not this season so much, but in previous years, they've got up similar attendances, similar type of club to Burton Albion in terms of size. They've done well. Fleetwood, I know they've got lots of money behind them, but again, similar size of club, similar rise in recent years. I don't think there's a great difference between the top end of League Two and, say, mid-table in League One. So I'm pretty confident looking ahead to next season, even at this very early stage, and a lot could change over the summer, but I think at this stage, Burton, I'm sure, could compete pretty well in League One.
For many people, it must have been a bit of a surprise to see someone like Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink taking the job at Burton, his first managerial post in this country. But he's obviously done really well in his first few months in the job. He's got the promotion under his belt. But if he continues to do well, and next season Burton are in the top half of League One, pushing up towards the playoffs maybe, such is his profile, it's not going to take long before bigger clubs start eyeing Jimmy and as someone who's got a reputation, who's quite a sexy name for Football League clubs, and there could be a fight on their hands to keep hold of Jimmy if he keeps doing well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think he's a guy destined for big things in management. You know, he was a winner as a player, tremendous career as a player. And I think he's already shown signs, you know, of being that sort of mentality in management. You know, I think you could already see this guy's going to be a winner as a manager. When the final whistle went, and Burton knew they were promoted. You know, you go on the pitch, you do your interviews. We went over to Jimmy, and one of the first things he said to me was, you know, delighted for the promotion, of course, delighted for the club, but the season's not done yet, he said. We want to finish the season as winners, and the players will be in on Monday to focus on Northampton, which is Burton's game this Saturday. So, as you say, a big name, someone with a big history behind him, and I don't think it will be long, no, if he does well at League One level, but for other clubs do come looking. You know, you look at perhaps the likes of Leeds United, where he was a former player. Leeds is a bit of a basket case at the best of times at the moment. But there will be fans of clubs like that. There will be fans of clubs perhaps struggling in the Championship or at the top end of League One who feel they should be higher, who will look to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink and say, if he's come in and made such a great impact at Burton, why can't he do the same at my club? And I've no doubt that in 3-4 years' time, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink will be at a higher level, at a much higher level, whether it's with Burton or whether it's with someone else.
Okay, Joe, just before we let you go, because I know you're on your way to the Reading against Birmingham game at the Medeski as we're recording this, you are a Wickham fan. You would have been watching that result from Gig Lane intently last night, and a win for Southend. I know, that we'll talk more about this in a minute. But yeah, a win for Southend puts it back in Wickham's hands now. They've had a really tricky week or two, haven't they, with injuries and obviously the draw at Wimbledon. They lost at home to Oxford a couple of weeks ago. Morecambe at home and then Northampton away. They win both those games, they'll be promoted. Do you think it's going to be that simple, though?
Oh, well, it rarely is with Wickham, to be honest. As I think we saw last season, I mean, Gareth Ainsworth's done a miracle job so far. There's no question about that. My worry, Mark, really, is with the squad and the injuries. Are they finally taking its toll? They barely had enough players to put a team out against Wimbledon last weekend. Somehow got away with a 0-0 draw. It's still in their hands. My only worry is, as I say, do they have the energy? Do they have the impetus to get the... I think it's probably going to be 6 points that Wickham need to get over the line. So they're going to have to beat Morecambe at home and Northampton away. Again, teams with nothing to play for. So if you're looking for two games that you wanted to pick at the end of the season, perhaps they'd be up there. But it's going to be difficult for Gareth Ainsworth. I just hope for his sake, you know, he can summon up the motivation to just drive these players over the line, because I think some of them really are on their last legs in terms of fitness at the moment.
I've got to say, that's music to my ears. But it probably
it's probably
Southend, though, that the team that will be worrying Wickham now, because they've not let in a goal in six games and they're only 5 goals behind on goal difference. So it's not just one team Wickham have got to pip now, it's two.
Yeah, absolutely. If, you know, Southend have got Luton at home, haven't they, and Morecambe away.
Everyone's playing Morecambe.
I mean, they can go and score goals, and 5 goals isn't much in terms of that goal difference, of course, especially when it comes to the last day of the season. If Southend know they've got to win 3-2, 3-0 at Morecambe, then they'll have the game plan and they'll go out and they'll do their best to do it. It does worry me a bit, but it's still in Wickham's hands, and there's parts of me actually that thinks it's great that they've managed to get this far. You know, whatever happens, they'll definitely be in the playoffs. And it, you know, I know it sounds a bit of a cop-out, but at this stage of the season, for them to have gone from nearly falling out of the Football League by 1 goal, I think it was, last season to Bristol Rovers, to be within 2 wins, potentially, of League One, I can't believe it. It's just an extraordinary turnaround.
Yeah.
So it's been enjoyable just for that.
Good stuff. Well, I can't wish Wickham good luck for the rest of the season, but I can say thanks very much for coming on, Joe, and speaking to us. Enjoy the game tonight that you're at, and hopefully enjoy Burton being crowned champions at the weekend.
hope so. Cheers, Mark. Thank you.
That's Joe Shannon, BBC Radio Derby's Burton Albion reporter. And we'll have more, sadly, on the events in League 2. Plus a look at the Championship and League 1 after this.
It's time to do something great together. Join Men United and help beat prostate cancer. Search Men United now.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
All change at the top of the Championship, DC.
Isn't it just? You didn't
please some Bournemouth fans last week.
Oh, and I don't care one iota. I'm sorry, Bournemouth fans.
So basically, this is what happened at the weekend. All started on Friday night. Now, I've got to preface a lot of this by saying I was in Amsterdam, so I didn't really see very much of this. Mm. Norwich 0, Middlesbrough 1.
How was the trip in Amsterdam?
It was cracking. Yeah, it was good.
Would you say it'd be one of the best trips you've ever been on?
Shut up. You're allowed one more play about this show. One more play, okay? So, this is what happened. Norwich 0, Middlesbrough 1. I tell you what, the Middlesbrough bench at full-time, they really celebrated that win.
And it was the perfect win for them, really, wasn't it? Because everyone was looking at that game going into it thinking Middlesbrough don't have a great away record against some of the top sides, don't have a lot of goals in them. Norwich, you know, good on their own patch. But getting that early goal, an own goal, though it was, from Alex Tetti, it allowed them to focus on what they do best, and that is be tight, be very solid at the back. And they rode their luck a couple of times with Norwich having some good chances, but generally, they kept Norwich pretty quiet. And, I mean, it was a marvellous defensive display, and that's what they're good at, and it was a great win for them.
So they set the bar on Friday. That was the standard to live up to on Saturday. Watford 1, Birmingham 0, Craig Cathcart.
Oh.
With a sensational kind of, not a proper overhead kick, it's kind of a sort of swivelled overhead kick.
Sort of swivel, volley, scissor kick, whatever you want to call it.
He's a centre-back, isn't he?
It was magnificent. The man is a centre-back. And I tell you what, he's been magnificent, actually, for us this season. He's had a couple of little injuries here and there, but when he's been in the team, he's been a model of consistency. And it's his second spell at the club, Cathcart. He had a very short loan spell with us under Malky Mackay, I think, a few years ago.
Was he at Blackpool?
He was at Blackpool. Yeah, Holloway, he was originally at Manchester United. And he was on loan to us from United back then. And he wasn't that good, really, back then for that month. But it was only a month, so what can you tell in a month? But so people were thinking, what's he going to be like? He's been at Blackpool, haven't done very well the last year or so. But he's come in and he's obviously learnt a lot in the last few years. He's grown in stature as a player, grown in maturity, and he's been a really calming influence for us at times because we don't have the best defence, but he's definitely been our best defender this season. And he's come up with a couple of goals and none more crucial than that one against Birmingham on Saturday when it was tight. Somebody had to break the deadlock and, you know, you don't always turn to your centre-half in that occasion, but it was nice that he could do it.
Well, so yeah, 2-1-0s, so very tight affairs, as you say, where wins for Middlesbrough and Watford. Bit of a different kind of game at the Goldsand Stadium on Saturday. Bournemouth were down to 10 men after Simon Francis was sent off for a second yellow. They were 1-0 down to Sheffield Wednesday, I think, at the time. They came back to win, to be leading 2-1, Jan Kermagan and Matt Ritchie. And then...
What's a goal from Matt Ritchie, though, by the way? Tremendous goal.
In stoppage time, penalty awarded to Sheffield Wednesday, converted by Chris Maguire. Mm. And, I mean, you said last week, I think, one draw. And they could be out of the top two. I mean, they're still in the top two as things stand. But at this stage of the season, a bit like Norwich will have seen, we're dropping those 3 points. Like, even a 1 point dropped makes a big difference.
I think some of the Bournemouth players may even have been in tears at the end of that game, which is slightly premature. They've still got a fantastic chance of going up. But, I mean, I was following the games on Soccer Saturday and, you know, I was nervous, really nervous, waiting for updates. Chris Kamara was at Vicarage Road, and I was waiting for him to pop up, and there weren't many unbelievable Jeffs in the first hour or so. There was obviously a lot of nerves at Vicarage Road, and eventually we got the goal and brilliant. But then Sheffield Wednesday were 1-0 up, and you know I was in dreamland, absolutely in dreamland. But then what started to happen? Bournemouth get the goal back. Bournemouth go down to 10 men. Bournemouth get another goal and go in front. And you may have seen me post on Twitter frustrated comment Bournemouth's direction, which got me a bit of stick. But
because I only saw that today, but
I went too early.
You did, but that was just basically an office quote. You being David Brent, some people didn't realise that you called them pathetic for winning.
Yeah, it was semi sort of sarcastic and semi annoyed at them. But the penalty, 95 minutes in, and I mean, what a crucial penalty that could turn out to be. And Eddie Howe, you know, we've mentioned that they've got a lot of penalties, Bournemouth themselves this season. And Eddie Howe has sort of been on the offensive after that game. He felt Bournemouth should have had a penalty. Callum Wilson was brought down, and he's been the guy that's been fouled most of the times for a lot of their penalties, such as his pace. And he was actually saying that he thinks the referees have got together and said, right, no more penalties for Bournemouth. They've had too many. It's starting to look bad.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
And, you know, well, exactly. I mean, he's obviously saying he's obviously frustrated, but he believes they should have had a penalty. And, you know, that combined with them conceding one could have dire consequences.
The one thing about this show is that, you know, even through the years, we're all just sort of football fans, and we do try and stay quite impartial. But I'm sorry, at this stage of the season, that goes out the window. Yeah. I mean, when there's promotions on the line, this is the time when our true colours are going to come flying out. So that's how I would defend it. Anyway, so in that 14 mini league, the top four, Watford, Bournemouth, Middlesbrough and Norwich, all played 44 games. Watford 85, Bournemouth 84, Middlesbrough 84, but a good 15 goals back on goal difference from Bournemouth, and Norwich on 82. So I'm sorry to say this in a way, because you know what happens when this happens to teams, but it's in your hands, mate.
You've got
two games there. Away at Brighton Saturday lunchtime on the telly, and then Sheffield Wednesday at home. Win those two games, you'll be in the Premier League.
I know. I mean, it's scary, isn't it? And on Monday morning, so many people at work were saying, oh, come on, mate, you're going to go up, aren't you? Look at that. What a weekend. You're going to do it. You're only going to bloody go and do it, aren't you? And with each answer I gave, I became less and less confident that we were going to do it. I was hating every word that uttered from my mouth. I just, you know, I was cringing with each time I had to state our case as to why we were going to do it.
Well, shall I give the other run-ins?
Yeah.
Norwich have got Rotherham away on Saturday and then Fulham at home. So they're playing two teams right down near the bottom. So maybe they can pick up two wins there. Middlesbrough also playing Fulham. That's away on Saturday at Craven Cottage. Then they play Brighton at home. And the interesting thing this weekend, I think, is that Bournemouth are not playing till Monday night.
No.
So if everyone else wins, think of the pressure they're going to be under. They're at home to Bolton on the TV and they finish at Charlton away.
I mean, we could technically be promoted on Saturday.
Is that?
Yeah, because if we beat Brighton on lunchtime,
and then Middlesbrough and Norwich lose,
we're up.
Yeah. In fact, even if Norwich draw, because they'll be on 83, you'll be on 88.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. It's that stage of the season where we have to start looking at the numbers.
If Middlesbrough draw, they'll be on 85.
Norwich. If Norwich draw, they'll be on 83. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so Middlesbrough's the
this
one.
This is why I don't do countdown.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so let's talk about the playoff situation. Very different to those 1-0. It's Huddersfield 4, Derby 4. Blimey. That was a hell of a game, wasn't it? Derby and Ipswich. You're still studying the numbers there.
Yeah.
Derby and Ipswich. Ipswich got a draw at Wolves, but that was kind of as good as a win because it kind of keeps Wolves at arm's length.
Good result.
So Derby on 76, Ipswich on 75, and now there's a 3-point gap to Brentford and Wolves, who are on 72.
But maybe that shows you exactly the problem with Derby this season. We've talked a lot about their striking problems, with Chris Martin being injured, Darren Bent being injured, but actually, if you look at the goals conceded column, that's possibly where the real damage has been done this season. They conceded far too many goals, and you know you shouldn't be having four all draws with Huddersfield.
Derby, you've got Millwall away and then Reading at home. Ipswich finish against Forest and then Blackburn. Brentford have got Reading and Wigan, and Wolves have got Wigan and then Millwall. There you go. Confirmed in the playoffs already, Watford, Bournemouth, Norwich and Middlesbrough. But of course, two of them will be going up automatically. Right down at the bottom, Blackpool already relegated. Wigan are clinging on. They won 2-1 against Brighton at the DW Stadium on Saturday. They're on 39 points. Rotherham, we still don't know whether they're going to be deducted points. 5 points ahead and fourth bottom. So basically, Wigan have got to win both their games and hope. Well, unless there's a points deduction, hope that something happens. Wigan finish against Wolves and then away against Brentford, which is a very tough finish. Millwall, DC, lost 2-0 at Blackburn on Tuesday night this week, which is their game in hand. And
That could be it.
That really, really could have done with a win there, because that would have got them back within 1 point at Rotherham.
Absolutely. So now they are absolutely praying for a points deduction for Rotherham and need Rotherham to lose Well, all of those games, really.
Yeah, so Rotherham have got Norwich at home Saturday, then they play Reading on Tuesday, and then they play Leeds away on the last day.
I mean, Leeds are in a state of utter disarray. Did you see all that from Friday?
To be honest, I only heard about this on Football Weekly on my five-hour megabus today. Barry Glendenning was talking about it. Talk Sport's very own Barry Glendenning.
Yeah, absolutely. Chaos.
You talk about seven Leeds players or six players who were in the squad and then just couldn't play because they were injured. Someone was tweeting a picture of their injury.
They're all the players as well that were signed by Chileno in the summer. So all the talk and the suggestion was that Chileno may or may not have told them to, in inverted commas, go on strike under the veil of being injured. And a couple of them started coming up on Twitter and Instagram, posting pictures of scars, of injuries, and saying, oh, I'm injured, this is why I'm injured, this, that and the other. But it all combined basically for, yet another sorry episode in what's been a pretty sorry season for Leeds. And I was speaking to a few Leeds fans on Monday morning, some of the guys that went to the game down in London at Charlton, and the fans, it's just one disaster to the next, and they don't know what's going on. And Chileno's supposedly coming back to the club, even though he appears to basically still be there even though he's banned. So who knows what's going to happen in the summer? It looks like he doesn't want Redfern, though, despite Redfern doing not too bad, really, considering how bad they were doing before. It looks like Redfern will probably go in the summer, so God knows what's going to happen next.
Right, League One then. Bristol City are the champions. They drew 0-0 at home to Coventry. Bit of a damp squib to seal it, but they have won the title and they'll be getting the trophy, I presume, on the final day when they play Walsall at home. They could still... Oh, no, they can't crack 100 points. They can get to 99 if they win the last two. But really interesting is the battle for second place. Preston looked to have this sewn up sort of a week or so back, pretty much. They were away at Port Vale on Friday. They were 2-1 up, and Port Vale were down to 10 men, and they conceded a late equaliser to finish 2-2. MK Dons then absolutely routed Leighton Orient 6-1 on Saturday to cut the gap. And then on Tuesday this week, both played simultaneously. MK Dons won again 3-0 at home to Doncaster, and Preston won 3-1 at Notts County. They have a point advantage going into the last two games. That is a perilous advantage to have, just a single point. And I make that, what's that? That's 5 wins in the last 6. That's 6 wins in the last 7 for MK Dons. In fact, 8 wins in the last 9, I think. They're on fire. So that's going to the wire.
Yeah, and I've been backing Preston all the way. But it does, it is looking nervous for them as well. I mean, that goal difference is not in their favour as well. MK Dons absolutely streets ahead on their goal difference. So if Preston were to lose and MK Dons just get a point, if the gap remains as it is, then MK Dons will be the ones that go up. But I do hope Preston go up. I would like to see them do it.
Final two games. Do you want to read them out?
Yeah. Well, Preston Swindon at home on Saturday. Swindon drew. They drew 3-3.
They did with Walsall
in the week. And then Colchester away on the final day of the season. MK Dons, Rochdale away on Saturday, and then already relegated Yeovil at home on the final day.
Well, Chesterfield at the minute have a 5-point advantage over Rochdale. It's the only team that can make a bid to get in the playoffs are Rochdale. But you think they're a bit too far back, 5 points. So basically MK Dons are playing two teams with nothing to play for in their last two games. Mm. Whereas Preston are playing Swindon, who... obviously in the playoff pitch, and Colchester were fighting to stay up.
Swindon are a funny one, though, because they've got no hope of getting third, and they've got no hope of finishing fifth. They are going to finish fourth, whatever happens. So they are basically, they might realistically be looking at the playoffs and thinking, we've got two huge games coming up in the playoffs, whoever it's against, we need to save ourselves.
So in the playoffs, it's going to be, one of Preston and MK Dons, Swindon, Sheffield United, and then probably Chesterfield. Right, down to the relegation picture. This is far from sorted at the bottom of League One. Yeovil are gone, we know that. Colchester, they are 4 points off safety, but they have 3 games to play. So they are playing Fleetwood away on Saturday, then Swindon at home, and then Preston at home. So they've got 2 teams in the top 6 still to play. It's looking pretty bleak. They drew 2-2 at home to Scunthorpe on Saturday. Just above them in 22nd, Notts County, a 3-1 home reverse to Preston. And before that, they lost 2-0 at Crawley in a big game at the weekend. It's looking pretty bleak if you're a Notts County fan. And likewise for Leighton Orient, back in the relegation zone after, that 6-1 defeat on Saturday at MK Dons and a 1-0 loss at Rochdale in midweek. They are also 2 points off safety with 2 games to go. But Crewe and Crawley and even Port Vale just about in sight. You'd think that Scunthorpe and Coventry would be safe. But it's a bit of a melee down there.
Yeah, and Leighton Orient, I mean, I was reading a piece recently.
They're kind of the opposite of
about them. And
they're like the opposite of Wickham, what they've done this season.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, fantastic season last year. And we did the sort of... We had a look at Leighton Orient in some depth, didn't we, a few months ago now, I suppose. And it all points down to that disastrous... There are many things that have gone wrong this season, but for me, the most disastrous thing is appointing Fabio Liverani as manager, a guy that had 6 managerial games experience in Italy before taking the Leighton Orient job. He just clearly wasn't ready for this job. He might be a good coach, good manager one day. He's got a good pedigree as a player, but there's no way he was ready to manage Leighton Orient in League One with that level of experience. And I think it showed. I mean, it's been a disastrous season for them. And if they get relegated to League Two, if you look at the players they brought in the summer and the wages they would have been paying some of those players, it is an utter shambles.
And West Ham as well, dipping the season ticket prices for the Olympic Stadium, which I know Barry Hearn, even though obviously he's not chairman anymore, is not too happy about. He's been talking out about that today. So yeah, things looking pretty bleak, but there are plenty of, well, there's plenty. There's 2 opportunities to change it. There's plenty of big games down the bottom. Later on, finish against Sheffield United and Swindon. Notts County finish at home to Doncaster and then away to Gillingham. Crewe and Crawley just outside the relegation zone. Okay, down to League Two. Burton Albion, as we talked about in depth, are promoted. They'll win the title if they win on Saturday and Shrewsbury don't. Shrewsbury is still not promoted with 2 games left, but they've got a 5-point cushion on fourth. So basically, because of their goal difference, they need 1 draw and they're away to the bottom team in the Football League. Second bottom. In fact, Cheltenham bottom, the second bottom team in the Football League at the weekend. So Shrewsbury are going to be promoted. Mickey Mellon is going to get them up to League One. So congratulations to them, because I'm sure they'll be celebrating on Saturday. And that leaves 1 automatic promotion place to be filled.
Right, come on then.
Right, so Saturday, we won 1-0 at Portsmouth and Wickham drew 0-0 at AFC Wimbledon, and that was them dropping points, which we've been waiting for a few weeks now. Basically meaning we were 2 points behind them. We had this game in hand. Southend won it again at the weekend, so they were 1 point back from us. So basically, if we won this game in hand Tuesday night this week, we would go, if you're a new listener, we being Barry, we would go 1 point above Wickham. So basically, our destiny was in our own hands. Win our last 3 games, we'll be promoted to League One. So bring on the big game. Bury against Southend on Tuesday night. This is the abandoned game from a few weeks back. Free entry to all. And there was 8,500 there. Biggest attendance I can remember in a long, long time. And we lost 1-0. So I went back.
What a disaster.
I went back to the game yesterday. It was an ex-player of ours, David Worrell. Really tragic story relating to him. Him and his girlfriend or wife had a baby recently, and the baby died about an hour after it was born. I didn't know that at the time. He was very emotional about that after the game. He scored an absolutely belting free kick. He didn't really celebrate, to be fair, sort of out of respect for us. He was with us when we got promoted in 2011. It's one of those games where we dominated, didn't score, and then, you know, second half, Phil Brown made a double sub, and they just took the initiative, and they've not conceded a goal, Southend United, for 6 matches, which is...
It's remarkable.
Remarkable record. Obviously, Daniel Bentley's been talked about a lot, their goalkeeper.
You know what, I'm quite surprised he's still there, because he's been there quite a few seasons now, putting in good performances. He's been talked about a lot. I'm sure he's been watched. I know for a fact he's been watched by clubs from leagues and higher leagues above, so I would wonder whether they go up or not, whether he'll be there next season. He's certainly a hot talent, a hot prospect for the future. But the whole defence, not just Bentley, the defence in front of him as well, that's a fantastic achievement to keep 6 clean sheets in a row. I mean, their defence, again, it was very good last season and it's been even better this season.
It was one of those games that was really, really tight, though. It's going to be 1-0 either way and they just happened to nick it.
And what a goal it was. I mean, you mentioned David Worrell there of very, very sad circumstances. And for him to be able to focus on playing football when something like that's happened, and not only to just turn up and play, but to score a goal of that quality in a game of that importance is quite an achievement and fantastic goal, and it was worthy of winning the game.
Well, let's hear from Phil Brown then. The Southend United manager gave his reaction to their 1-0 win at Bury on the Alan Brazil Sports Breakfast on TalkSport.
It was, my word, Alan, it was a tough night, to tell you the truth, because... You know, the Bury chairman, because of the first game, I don't know if you know the story, obviously the first game was rained off and we played about 6 minutes, and there was about 4,500 fans turned up for that, and we had about 400 there from Southend. And they decided to go free-for-all last night. You know, they opened the gates and there's about 8,500. I think it was the biggest crowd at Bury for about 20 years. So it was a hell of an atmosphere. And to be fair to Flitty, he set his team out positively. They came out the traps, really got at us in the first half, and we've got this unbelievable mentality at the moment for keeping clean sheets. You know, we're putting our bodies on the line. Local lad Adam Barrack, you know, he's a local legend, 290 games before he, you know, in his first spell at the football club. He's come back, he's in the side, and he's thrown himself in front of shots. Kane Bulger, just everybody's playing their part at the moment, you know. And then at the other end, Dave Worrell, of all people, I don't know if you know the story, Alan, Dave Worrell About 4 weeks ago, had a horrendous problem where his family was concerned. You know, his girlfriend got pregnant, and then 21 weeks into it, they had to quickly have the baby, and the baby died after 45 minutes. And David's just been missing for about 4 or 5 weeks, which you can fully understand. But last night, against his former club, and you talk about all the emotions spilling out, my word, he stuck the ball in from a free kick. And he broke down, and oh, he just dedicated everything to Noah. He's the child that was born, and it was really a really important moment last night for us, you know. And hopefully, you know, that will stand David in good stead for the rest of his career, and hopefully us for the last two games as well. We went to Burton about 7 games ago. We got beat 2-1 against 10 men, and I was really really low after the game. But we got the lads together. We had a real heart to heart, and since then they've responded. 7 clean sheets on the bounce, and. And not just that, you know, we've got 19 points from 21. So it's given us a real good chance. I would have said, yeah, defensively, I would have thought it's given us the chance. But the guys at the other end, you know, I mean, Barry Coe's still putting his body on the line for a 30-year-old. You know, he's been out of the game for about a 15-month period, and he's got broken this and broken that. And, you know, he's played a lot of games for us, and last night he really put himself through it, you know. So the boys at the front end are doing it as well, no doubt about it. Last night was a good advert for the second division, I've got to say. You know, 8,500 turned up, and we really went at each other. Second half, we got to grips with it, but Berry in the first half, I've got to say, they should have got something from the game. Bottom line is, we just showed that resilience and got the win.
We should have got something from that game. He's completely right. That is Phil Brown talking on the Alan Brazil Sports Breakfast. On my birthday as well. On my birthday. You know, right, you know when you support a small club and you get a big crowd in? Huge, huge crowd it was for us. And we lost 1-0. You just got to win those games. Obviously, we won't got to win for promotion, but to keep them coming back. And they put the Southend fans, sort of, the away fans are usually behind the goal, but they put them to the side. And so we had both home fans behind both goals, and we just couldn't get the ball.
I mean, I've been mocking you all day, but I mean, if we do that against Sheffield Wednesday on the last day of the season, you know, God knows what I don't even want to imagine how bad I feel. So it is terrible.
It's not over yet, though.
You've got a chance to go, you know, to still do it.
It's not over yet. So,
and you're going to be in a playoffs.
Yeah. Well, this is a situation. And Wickham, so 2 games to go. Wickham on 81, Southend on 81. We're on 79. Wickham have got 5-goal advantage on Southend on goal difference. We were chatting about this earlier when we were chatting to Joe. But Wickham finish with Morecambe at home on Saturday. Always been a big fan of Kevin Ellison. Then they play Northampton away. Southend finish with Luton at home, and then Morecambe away. Always been a big fan of Kevin Ellison. And we finish with Wimbledon at home, and then Tranmere away. So basically, I'm going back up Saturday. We've got to win Saturday. 5 o'clock, we'll just see what's happened. I think that's all we can do, really. Mm. Got to win on Saturday. Yeah. And then if those two teams drop points, if they both draw and we win, then we'll all be level on 82, and that'll be a hell of a final day. Below that, Stevenage are just about in the playoffs. They've got a 4-point cushion. They've played Carlisle and Luton the last two. Plymouth and Luton and maybe Newport. I think Newport just about out of it. Northampton Exeter have got an outside bet, but it's basically between Plymouth and Luton for that final spot. Luton have got really tough final two games. Southend away and then Stevenage. Always love Luton if you can get a result at Southend on Saturday.
Well, given that, then Newport might fancy the chances of sneaking in, because York and Oxford, York away and then Oxford at home.
Yeah,
winnable games for Newport.
And Plymouth have got Tranmere at home, who obviously got a lot to play for, and Shrewsbury away, who probably will be promoted by them, but might be going for the title. So it's not easy for them either. I don't want a trip to Plymouth in the playoffs. That's going to be a hell of a long journey.
Would you go down to Home Park?
I think I would, because I think the away leg...
Probably a good time to go to Plymouth, really. The weather would probably be quite nice at this time of year.
Well, the thing is, we've beaten... So in those teams, Stevenage, I think we've won at home and drew away. Plymouth, we beat them home and away.
Stevenage and Southend are close. And so is Wickham to London. So
that's very true. Down at the bottom then...
You're going to get Plymouth, aren't you?
Yeah, of course we are. Down at the bottom, it's...
But, mate, it will be a good trip.
You've passed your allowance. He was stood there at the side, his permatanned face, absolutely loving his.
He's doing the marathon on Sunday.
He is doing the marathon.
He's probably as fit as some of his players.
Anyway, right, and that's enough about that. You can see how funny football is. Within a week, the emotion changes, the opposite effect. Maybe it'll be you this time next week. Yeah. Down at the bottom of League 2.
I don't think there's any clips of Stuart Gray singing on the internet, though, so I think I'll be okay.
Stuart Day. Oh, Stuart Gray. That's right. Sorry.
Yeah. I've got my Stuart Day.
Sorry.
It's been a long day for you, isn't it?
It's been a long day. Down at the bottom of League 2. Tranmere, Cheltenham and Hartlepool. Basically, it's two from those three. Above that, everyone's safe. So well done to everyone who's stayed up. So, state of play with two games to go. Hartlepool 41 points, Cheltenham 40 points, Tranmere 39 points. So Tranmere have got to make up 2 points on Hartlepool in the last two games. Here are the fixtures. Hartlepool have got Exeter at home and Carlisle away. Cheltenham have got Shrewsbury at home and then Wimbledon away. That's particularly tough. And then Tranmere have got Plymouth away and Bury at home.
And of course, Tranmere don't have a manager.
They don't. Because Mickey Adams resigned.
Yeah. I mean, is that the final bell being tolled for Mickey Adams' managerial career? Surely that man's not going to get another job.
Well, the thing is, he did quite well at Port Vale this recent time, didn't he?
Mm.
Overall.
I suppose so.
And then he took that job, obviously, thinking he could keep them up. And he's decided he can't, and he's just jumped ship. I mean, that might be a very simple way of looking at it, or what's the word, a very cynical way of looking at it.
I suppose he did do okay. You know, yeah, he did a good job at Port Vale, if you look at it in totality. But basically, his career has been one of large spells of mediocrity for a long time.
Was he Sheffield United manager when they got relegated from the Championship? Yeah, I thought he was. He's had a few of those.
Yeah.
He's had a few of those. Did all right at Brighton.
Premier League.
Did all right at Brighton back in the day.
Yeah. He's been Coventry manager, hasn't he?
He's been everywhere. Yeah. He's been everywhere. Tranmere going down then, do you reckon?
I do expect them to go down, yeah. But then I suppose maybe the thing that they will look to give them hope is that Adams has gone. Can the caretakers, we should probably know the caretakers are, shouldn't we really? can the players raise themselves in those last two games? It doesn't look likely, does it? But we've seen great escapes before. You know, teams that look dead and buried on the last day of the season before they drop out of the Football League. Look at Wickham last year, you know, and it can do funny things to players. Pressure can make you perform or it can make you crumble, and they've got to do one or the other.
Alan Rodgers and Sean Garnett.
There you go.
They're the caretaker managers. And Cheltenham obviously got a really tough final two games there. Shrewsbury and Wimbledon, it could all be over on Saturday. If Hartlepool can win and the other two lose, it'll all be over. Right, the Football League Players of the Year were announced at the Football League Awards. Mm-hmm. Very pleased to see Danny Meyer, Bury midfielder, who had about four men on him last night. Not surprisingly, win the League Two award. I believe all 23 managers voted for him in the League Two, which is amazing if that's true.
He didn't have the best game, but he played against Luton. I think he did, didn't he? When I went to see them.
I'm not sure.
With
it was
you.
A long time ago,
I don't
mate.
Think, yeah. I don't remember having the best game. But, do you think he's been a deserving winner?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He's a cut above. Joe Garner, Preston, League One.
He scored a lot of goals.
Quite surprised he's not someone from Bristol City, personally.
I'm going to say, Bristol City romping home to the title, you'd think that maybe Freeman... or Wilbraham, or Aidan Flint, maybe, would have at least been worthy of a mention. Joe Garner won it, and, you know, good luck to him.
And in the Championship, you.
Me.
Patrick Bamford, Middlesbrough, won the player. And you got to hope, for his sake, next year, that he gets a chance at Chelsea. But I'm not sure he will. But
although, maybe, for his sake, you want Middlesbrough to go up and he could stay there and play for a year in the Premier League with Middlesbrough. Maybe that would be a good halfway house for him.
I'm sure he would say that. But you have with you a magazine, don't you?
Yes.
What is it?
I should also mention Dele Alli getting the best young player of the year.
And Eddie Howe winning manager of the decade.
Yeah. Did you see the team of the decade?
No.
It was very, very interesting.
There's a great thing on our forum.
Nuge was in it, I think.
There's a great thing on our forum. I'm sure it was the same on a lot of clubs after this was announced. It was like, give us your team of the decade. It's like, for you, it'd be your Watford team of the decade, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And people just posting with the worst 11 we've had in the last 10 years. Reminds you of some absolute shockers. But you've got with you a copy of
442.
442?
Yeah. Very and they've done their annual top 50 players in the Football League.
Interesting. I've not seen this, so I don't have a clue.
So it always,
So this isn't your
platform
players,
for discussion and debate, isn't
it? It's the top 50 players in total, not the top 50 young players, correct?
No, nothing to do with the young players.
Excellent, okay.
Nothing to do with what we're
because we've
doing.
Got that one cornered off.
But it's just the top 50 players of all ages.
Well,
so
all right.
Count you down the top 10?
Yeah, I can tell you what, I'll add a bit of sort of Top of the Pops related music under this. Actually, I can't sort of do that now, but I will add this in. So you're going to have to read this like a chart, mate. So best luck with this.
Okay.
So you go at 10 and then give it. At 9, a new entry, and so on and so on.
Okay, I don't...
I've done a couple of chart shows in my time, so I can do it, but you've got the magazine.
It doesn't have information as to where they finished last year, so I can't give you any new entry.
Down 1, new entry,
data.
Up 2, non-mover.
Okay.
Number 1.
At 10, starting off the countdown, it's Jordan Rhodes, Blackburn Rovers striker, age 25.
Slightly surprising. Okay, at 9.
And at 9, dropping down into League 1, it's Massimo Luongo of Swindon Town.
Good. The reason half of their games have been delayed on international weekends. At 8.
And at 8, it is Will Hughes, the albino midfielder from Derby County. Still just 19 years old.
Smart. Good year opposite
Incredible.
Me.
Incredible. Number 7, the aforementioned Dele Alli, winning the Football League Young Player of the Year at the awards on Sunday. Of course, technically not a Football League player because he is owned by Spurs, isn't he?
But technicality.
Played for MK Dons all season. Had a fine season. At 6, the Championship's top scorer so far is Daryl Murphy of Ipswich Town. 32. Didn't realise he was that old.
Getting on.
At 5, a man that's not seen much action of late, but he's there at number 5. It's Chris Martin, Derby County.
Now, is that a joke about Chris Martin splitting up with Gwyneth Paltrow? Is that not much action in the sense of not playing for Derby?
Not playing for Derby,
right, okay, sorry.
No talk of conscious uncoupling.
I thought
here,
that was
mate.
A smooth double entendre there.
No, I'm not that good. At 4.
We know that.
Possibly should have been higher. I think he should have been. It's Troy Deeney.
Bias.
Watford's 60-goal front man over the last 3 seasons.
Season.
That's quite a tally.
Right, this is it.
Number 3.
Yep.
We're going down to the south coast. Bournemouth, it's Callum Wilson.
Can't argue with that. He's had a great season.
Number 2. Scored a lot of goals early season. Don't think he's scored too many lately, but he's still been playing well. It's Middlesbrough's Grant Ledbetter.
Okay. Well, wow. He's a lot higher than I thought he would be.
And at number 1,
leave a dramatic pause.
Best player in the Football League, according to 442 and their assembled panel of experts, it's another Bournemouth player. It's Matt Ritchie.
There you go. There you have it. So, what do you reckon to that? I think we might have got the Bournemouth fans back on side by reading that list out. Let us know. You can tweet at Wagyu Podcast. Who do you think's been the best player in the Football League this season? And smooth link, here we go. Who do you think is the best young player at your club? Because that's what we want to hear from you about. Now, we've had a few more this week, but we're not getting hundreds of entries coming in, so we really do need your help with this, please. We're aiming to do a show at some point during the playoffs or at the end of the season where we talk about the best young players in the Football League. We'll hopefully get to speak to a couple of them as well if they're not already off in Marbella by that point. So, DC, what do people do?
They tweet us at Wagyu Podcast or they email us wagyupodcast@gmail.com.
And what do you want again,
all
quickly?
You've got to do is
you don't need to send a massive essay. You can do if you want, but you don't have to.
Just tell us who the best young player is at your club. And by young player, we mean 21 or younger, and they must have played for the first team this season.
Okay, let me give you some of the clubs we are short of. So Birmingham fans, Blackburn fans, Brentford fans, Norwich fans, Millwall fans, Wigan fans, and so on, MK Dons fans, Peterborough, Port Vale, Fleetwood, get in touch, and in League 2, Luton, Accrington, that's going to be a problem, Plymouth, Northampton, get in touch, let us know the best young player at your club. Now,
do you know where Danny Mayer finished in this top 50?
25.
18.
Oh, there you go.
According to 442, the 18th best player in the Football League.
He's a belter. Let's hope he's still with us next season playing in League One. Right, next week, I'm in Manchester and Liverpool as well. So I'm in the North. So how are we going to do this? We've not really talked about this. Are you going to present the show with me on the phone?
How are we going to do this?
you haven't even thought about this, have
no
you?
No idea. Well, I mean, I've got a stag do of my own to go to.
Ah.
Not my own stag do.
I was going to say,
no,
mate, congratulations.
Obviously, I'd invite you if that was the case.
Congratulations.
I'm going to a stag do at the weekend.
Okay, so, right, yes.
So I'm going to be in a bit of a state come next week.
So Watford are playing Brighton Saturday lunchtime.
Yeah,
you're going to be travelling to...
I've been desperately trying to rearrange the schedule to fit in... That's just my housemate. I'm put him down. I've been trying
As in the phone call.
yeah.
Good.
I've been trying to rearrange the schedule so we can miraculously be in a pub for an hour and a half on Saturday lunchtime, which is what you'd think you'd be doing on a stag do, wouldn't you? I'll be sort of somewhere. We're flying to Edinburgh, basically, from London on Friday morning.
Right.
And then we're going to Newcastle on the second night, on the Saturday. So I'll be somewhere between Edinburgh and Newcastle.
Okay. So next week, we may have a broken DC and me on the phone. Probably broken if things go badly again on Saturday. But we will have a show of sorts previewing the final.
Well, you could be speaking to a proud supporter of a Premier League football team.
Oh, that's true. That is true. We wouldn't need to do a show in that case. Just finish it. Right, that's it. So there will be a show next week previewing the final weekend of the season. Best of luck to everyone on your team this weekend. If your season depends on the result of Saturday, I hope you have a great day and you get promoted / don't get relegated. We will speak to you next time on We Are Going Up.
Good luck to Phil Brown in the marathon.
Sod off, Phil.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.